have an audio family reunion right here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington. Peace.
I'm Winsome Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
To turn it around.
This is Joni, and we are proud for the much of the show. Definitely this first part, we're going to talk about how the people did come together this Saturday to chase those crazy people out of town. I am very honored and excited to have calling us all the way from Newark, New Jersey, Larry Hamm, who is the founder and organizer for People's Organization for Progress. He helped to organize a No Kings Day event in Newark, and he's going to give us his update about this and his wise words in general about where we are in this country of ours. And later in the show, we're going to be honoring Black Fathers and the very special gathering that took place at Union Temple with 100 Black Fathers, 100 Fathers, and some other folks who got the award, and that'll be at around 10:20. They're doing very inspiring work. And these days we have 2 hours. At 11 o'clock, we'll be speaking with C.R. Gibbs about D.C. emancipation and Juneteenth. But right now I am very excited to welcome Larry Hamm onto our airwaves. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Joni. How are you this morning?
Better to see you and hear you.
It's good to hear you too.
So we've been hearing, you know, about the hundreds, how many thousands of events across the country? I think they say 2,000.
There were probably more than 2,000 events, yes, across the country. And I know there were at least 40 cities and towns in New Jersey that had events.
Wow.
Also, you know, and some of the events, you know, many of them were on the schedule. Like if you went to the No Kings website and you went to the map, you would see the location of where demonstrations were scheduled. But a lot of them were people coming together spontaneously, you know, a day or two before and just deciding we're going to do something in our town.
Wow.
So I would say there were probably more events than the 2,000 that were identified on the map on the No Kings website. And that's a great thing. It was a tremendous day.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about Newark. What was it like?
Well, it was a wonderful event. First of all, let me just give a little background to say, Joni, there were actually at one point going to be two events in Newark. One of the events was going to be spearheaded by the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice. And they were going to start their event in downtown Newark at Military Park. And then there was the People's Organization for Progress event, you know, which we had begun organizing, you know, some weeks ago. And our event was going to be at the Lincoln statue in front of the Essex County Courthouse in downtown Newark. So you're going to have two No Kings events, both of them in downtown Newark.
Wow.
But we had a pop meeting, and thank goodness for the women in the People's Organization for Progress. They said, Larry, you need to reach out. We need to have one event, not two. You need to reach out to the brothers and sisters in New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice, and let's make one event. And that's what happened. We had one event, and we brought our various constituencies together. After we decide to have this one event on Saturday, January 14th at 11 a.m. at the Lincoln statue, we broadened it a little bit, and other groups came on board as prime sponsors, including the ACLU of New Jersey and Make the Road New Jersey, which is another immigrant justice group. And there were other groups that came out and supported. For instance, the demonstration that we had was endorsed by the coalition. Remember, in my last discussion with you, I talked about the Martin Luther King People's Convention for Justice and Resistance, which had been endorsed by 287 organizations. So the coordinating committee for that coalition also endorsed the event. And we had hundreds of people. It was one of the biggest demonstrations I've seen in a while that we had in Newark. And guess what? It was in the pouring rain.
Wow.
I don't know about D.C. I can't speak for D.C.
No, it wasn't pouring rain.
It was pouring rain in Newark.
Wow. And in New York was, City.
And it was raining. And the police asked us, like, are y'all going to call it off? Like, no, we're not going to call it off. Let me tell you something. Half the people that came didn't have umbrellas. And they stayed until the event was over in the rain. It rained on and off and on and off. But we had the event, and we had speakers representing many different organizations, including some elected officials. Those elected officials that have been in the news recently, Mayor Ralph Sparacca was one of the speakers. And I'm sure your audience knows all about how the mayor was arrested by ICE, you know, agents, and also Congresswoman Monica McGiver, who was there when the mayor was arrested. She wasn't arrested. She and two other congresspeople were there, Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman and Congressman Robert Menendez. They weren't arrested. Ross Baraka was the only one arrested. But then the U.S. Attorney for New Jersey circled back, and they have now indicted the congresswoman. Mm-hmm. The first term congresswoman, she ain't even been in office a year yet. They indicted her. They put two assault charges on her. She's going to trial. She was indicted by a grand jury. She faces possibly 17 years if she's convicted of these assault charges. Imagine that. The police rushed out and assaulted Mayor Baraka. And they turn around and charge a congresswoman with assault. That's just like police brutality, right? The police beat up on somebody, then they charge them. You know, say the police say they were assaulted.
Wow.
And so they were the speaker. And also Congressman Menendez, he came and he spoke also. But we rallied in the rain at the Lincoln statue, and then we marched. And we lit up downtown Newark. Lit it up. Everything stopped. Joni, have you ever been to a march where it's so powerful it feels like time stops, right?
Yes.
Everybody stops. The traffic stopped. The people stopped. Everything stopped. And we marched from the Lincoln statue down to the center, the literal geographic center of downtown Newark, and marched back. And then we rallied again and has more speakers, and then we call it off. But it doesn't end there, because we announced to the people that this is an ongoing fight. One rally is not going to do it. And we announced the meeting that we're going to have tonight in Newark at Bethany Baptist Church, because we want everybody to come back and help in the ongoing organizing effort.
Wow. That is really something. Well, congratulations to you, and congratulations to all the people across this country who are standing up against, as Bob Marley says, these crazy bald heads.
Yes, we got to chase them out of town.
yes, we do. And Larry, tell us a little bit more about the Congresswoman McIver. Do you know when her trial is coming up, and is there a way that people may be able to support her?
Right. Well, people can support her. They can just look her up they can Google her or whatever search engine you use, call her office and ask her staff how best to support her. Now, she's had several dates already, and they have canceled those dates and moved those dates. I'm not sure as to why this is happening. In fact, I think she was supposed to appear today, but that was canceled again. So we're waiting, you know, we kind of want to be in, you know, in sync, you know, and so we're waiting to find out just when she has to appear in court, because people want to go and support her. You know, a lot of folks feel that this is not just an attack on her, it's an attack on Black people, attack on Black women. I mean, she's a young Black woman, 39 years old. She was the former city council president and was reelected in the sudden death of Congressman Donald Payne Jr. She was elected to take his seat. And she, like I said, she hasn't even been in office a year yet. Maybe it might just be 6 months she's actually been in office. And now she's faced with the possibility she might be going to federal prison, you know, because of the incident that occurred at Delaney Hall, which people are demanding be closed. And then I don't know if you heard the latest, Joni, but people broke out of Delaney Hall. I think it was on Friday. See, this was why Mayor Baraka was trying to get into the place, because it had been a facility that was for one purpose, and then Geo leased it or purchased it, whatever, for another purpose to make it an ICE detention facility. And they weren't up to code. So the people hadn't been fed. What I got, the information that I've received, the people weren't being fed, hadn't been fed for 20 hours. They weren't being permitted to have visitors. They couldn't see their family members. They couldn't see their lawyers. And there was frustration. And then, you know, there was a kind of mini uprising within the facility. So that's the latest. I mean, it seems that they've gotten things back under control. But that facility is a site of ongoing demonstrations. People are coming down to Delaney Hall. Now think about this. Delaney Hall is not downtown Newark. Delaney Hall, I don't know how many folks in the audience are familiar with Jersey, but most people have been on the New Jersey Turnpike. The Delaney Hall is out by the New Jersey Turnpike. It's in the industrial hinterland of Newark. Like, if you ain't got a car, you can't get down there. But people are coming in large numbers. They're like 40, 50 people out there every day protesting at Delaney Hall.
And yes. Delaney Hall, Larry, as I understand, is the largest ICE detention facility on the East Coast, or one of the biggest in the country?
It's one of the biggest. Is supposed to have beds for 1,100 detainees, but I'm not sure that many people are in there. In fact, I don't think that number of people are in there at this point. They actually, there's another facility on Freeland Heights and Avenue, which is more, you know, in the main part of Newark. It's in the South Ward, South Newark area. But this fight to close Delaney Hall is going to be ongoing. This fight to get justice for LaMonica McIver and the other detainees is going to be ongoing. And I don't know what's going on with the U.S. attorney, but she's like going crazy. Now, they dropped the charges against Mayor Baraka, but they've turned around now and filed suit against Mayor Baraka and four other mayors, I think all black mayors in New Jersey, because they have, quote unquote, sanctuary cities. And because they're interfering, according to U.S. Attorney Haber, they're interfering with the ICE agents as they attempt to snatch people and kidnap people. These ICE people, they're like modern day slave catchers, man. You know, they're masked. I mean, why are police officers, law enforcement officers, walking around with full masks? It's not even like a little mask. Wow. They're walking around with like full masks on. You know, what is that all about? Yes. This is just another kind of 21st century brown shirts working for Trump.
And as many people know, many people in the D.C. area, of course, know Ross Baraka well. He went to Howard. He's definitely known in our community. So we're going to have to make sure that we keep track of what's happening. And again, say the name of the congressperson who is under attack, the sister.
It's under indictment. Yes, under attack, under indictment. Her name is Congresswoman LaMonica McIver, M-C-I-V-E-R. So if you want to Google her, it's LaMonica McIver, M-C-I-V-E-R. Look her up, get her phone number, call her office. Her district office is in Newark, New Jersey, and she has her Washington office. So your audience can call her Washington office.
Wow. That's right. That's right.
Know?
And of course,
and she needs support. She's gotta get some heavy duty lawyers to fight these charges. Cause the feds, they're serious. They're trying to take her out. They indicted her. They're trying to take her out.
Yes, and of course, it's pretty obvious why they dropped those charges for Ross Baraka. He automatically had tons of support. He's much more well known than she is. So that was a deliberate move.
And not just metaphorically tons of support. Literally within hours after his arrest, hundreds of people were at the ICE detention facility where he was being he was moved from Delaney and taken to the facility on Freeland Heights Avenue in Newark. When I got there a couple of hours after his arrest, there were already hundreds of people there. They probably saw it was more to their advantage not to continue to detain him, you know, than to pursue it. But they turned right around, and now they're trying to attack LaMonica McIver. And, you know, this is right in line with this fascist attack on elected officials. Look at what happened to those elected officials in Minnesota, you know, that were shot and killed. And LaMonica talked about this. She talked about this at the rally that we had, the No Kings rally. We had, you know, how a lot of the Congress people, they feel that they and their staff people are in danger. They have incidents of staff people being followed and people writing down their license plate numbers and stuff like that. These people are very violent. These right-wing MAGA people, they're very violent, and it's clear they have no hesitancy about using that violence. But this didn't just start. I mean, just think about it. Wasn't it just a couple of years ago that both the Office of Homeland, I'm talking about the National Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, were saying that the greatest threat to public safety in the United States was white supremacist domestic terrorists. That's what they said.
That's right.
That's not what we said. That's what they said.
That's right.
And it didn't go away. And you know, this has been a problem in this country for decades.
Yes. It's more than decades, Larry, as you know, for centuries, really.
Yeah, but for centuries. For centuries. But in this contemporary period, we could go back to what, 1986? To the bombing of Oklahoma that killed all those children.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We're going to almost run out of time with Larry. In the next segment, we're going to be talking about the 100 Fathers and the special event that took place yesterday.
I wish I could have been there. I'm a father and a grandfather. I wish I could have been
there. Yes, you would have. And maybe you can, if you want to hold on when we bring on one of the fathers who won the award.
No, I'll let them have that space to themselves. I had my time.
I'm just going to ask our wonderful engineer, Magic Mike, to call Dr. Franklin Malone. Apparently he's having, he doesn't have these. Oh, okay, terrific. So let me just wrap up with Larry. I'd be happy to have Larry on for hours. Again, Larry Hamm is with the People's Organization for Progress, a longtime activist in Newark, New Jersey, originally born in Washington, D.C., but Newark is his home now. And Larry, before you leave, and of course, many listeners don't know that Larry can be heard on our sister station, WBAI, pretty much every Friday in the 7 p.m. hour. But Larry, before you leave us, just give your assessment. It's interesting that the media, including Democracy Now!, keep saying that this was the biggest outpouring of protests since Trump came into office in January. I wonder, is it the biggest protest? How many protests like this have there been ever for presidents? What do you think?
Well, there were pretty big protests and pretty numerous protests when Bush was president, mm-hmm. during the Iraq War.
That's true. The
two Iraq wars, the first one and the second one. Let us not forget the national and worldwide protests of Black Lives Matter. Let's not forget the national and worldwide protests of the Occupy movement.
Yes.
You know, people want to make like, you know, this opposition is just coming into the know. People have been opposing these right wing policies for a long time. But now, you know, we're clearly at a different stage, mm-hmm. you know, a stage that's built on previous stages, but one that requires, just as they have intensified their oppression, we must intensify our resistance.
Absolutely. Larry Hamm, thank you very much. Some of us who know you are very proud of you, and we will continue to have you on our airwaves. Thank you very much, Larry Hamm. People's Organization for Progress. It was great
power
to have
you. Power to the people.
Yeah, and we'll go out. Before we switch over, let's hear a little bit about that from Bob Marley again. Chase those crazy ball heads out of town.
Out of town.
Hatred you reward for our love, telling us of your God above. We're gonna chase those crazy, chase those crazy bumpers, chase those crazy bullets.
Okay, and welcome to the second half of To Heal DC. This is Joni, and we're going to be talking for the rest of the hour about the fabulous activities yesterday at Union Temple Baptist Church, and the 13th annual DMV Fathers of the Year Award. And we have one of those fathers on the air with us, Dr. Edwin Chapman, and hopefully we will be able to get Dr. Frank Malone on the air. I think he's having trouble with the Zoom, but hopefully he can be reached by phone. Dr. Frank Malone, who organized at least two magnificent events. He is the founder and CEO of 100 Fathers, the co-chair of the DMV Fatherhood Coalition with the great Tyrone Parker, So hopefully Dr. Malone will be joining us soon. But let's welcome Dr. Ed Chapman, who is a hero to those of us who know him and work with him, which are many people in the D.C. area. I've worked with him extensively over health issues and much, much more. And he's been a pioneer in fighting the opioid epidemic. And he was one of the major awardees yesterday and also at an earlier meeting at Howard University. So welcome, Dr. Chapman.
Thank you, Joni. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm very happy you could be here. And hopefully Dr. Malone will be joining us soon because we want to thank him. Perhaps, do you want to start with yesterday? I wish I could have been there. A Union Temple Baptist Church had a magnificent event, I understand, honoring some of the fathers, and you were amongst them. So perhaps you could start with describing what happened at Union Temple Baptist Church and how you felt about it. I must say, for listeners who don't know Dr. Chapman, he is greatly loved and appreciated, and we're glad that he could get this well-deserved award. So tell us a little bit about yesterday and perhaps also about what happened as well at Howard.
So thank you so much, Joni. Dr. Franklin Malone has actually put together a framework for healing our communities. And a year ago, the 100 Fathers, in conjunction with the Howard University School of Social Work, held their initial event there. That was in April 6th, I believe, of 2024. And he brought together organizations from the community, including Tyrone Parker, Roach Brown, the School of Social Work, and many, many others to really describe the circumstances that we were in. And this, okay, you have to remember, was before the November election. So and really anticipating the need to really organize our communities in such a way that we could heal ourselves.
And Dr. Chapman, Frank is on the phone now, so let's welcome in and we'll come right back to you. Good morning, Dr. Franklin Malone.
Good morning. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings. Dr. Chapman was just describing what happened yesterday at Union Temple, as well as the special event at Howard. And then we'll, of course, jump back to talk more with Dr. Chapman. But tell us, you are the founder and CEO of 100 Fathers, co-chair of the DMV, Fatherhood Coalition, with Tyrone Parker. Tell us, I don't know if you want to start with yesterday or the special event at Howard. It's up to you.
I want to start with the special event at Howard, if you would, please.
Yes.
Because let us. At Howard University, we brought together a cross-section of the people who can make the change that we need for our families and children. That was healing and restoring the soul of our community, part two. So this is the second year in a row that we've come up to Howard, to the School of Social Work. The first year, when they saw what we did, they gave us an office with the School of Social Work, Multidisciplinary Gerontology Center. So we're still connected to Howard. But what's important is we brought the professionals from the School of Social Work, the businesses from D.C. who support our families and fighting gun violence and drugs, Then we brought the youth in, and we're also connected to the organizations on the street, in the neighborhood, bringing peace to our families and children. It was marvelous. And I'm surprised I didn't get the kind of media coverage we should have gotten. But the blueprint and documentation is being done by Howard University Dean Robert Cosby and us. And we're going to put this plan out, how we save our families and children.
Wow. That's a big task. And if you could just briefly, Dr. Malone, share with us, what are some of those solutions that people spoke about it at Howard? Maybe you could pick out two or three.
Let me give you two or three. Mm-hmm. One of the most devastating, you know, we had Dr. Roger Mitchell, president of the Howard University Hospital, but also the message was this. Do you know in the past 3 to 4 years, we have buried 2,500 souls right here in D.C. from substance abuse? There's been an onslaught of fentanyl addiction. And as Reverend Willie Wilson said, the war on drugs was not a war on drugs. It was a war on black people.
Mm-hmm.
And so how could we lose 2,500 to drug overdose and we haven't put treatment in place? Secondly, the youth talked about they want to be heard. They want to be a part of this leadership. We had the boardroom there where the youth are looking to be a part of the solution and not the problem. So we have to promote that. And then the third thing was, people don't realize this conference we put together was organized by the 100 Fathers team. Men and strong black women working together. And what's important about that is we're changing the look of the new 21st century father and man. Who is that? We have to define for ourselves who we are. We are rational. We are reasonable. We are responsible. And we're taking control of our communities and neighborhoods. We got boots on the ground. We got people fighting to stop the gun violence. And how that's done, you got to change that young man's mind. The people who unwittingly are committing homicide and genocide, also are fatherless. So they don't even understand who they are or whose they are. And that takes the fatherhood initiative, the fatherhood leaders to go in, change their mind, show them who they are, and put them on a path of success. Give them the assets and the resources that they can be successful. What is that? Apprenticeships, jobs, mental health, all of the things that can make us whole again.
And of course, that means the budget and the mayor needs to be more money in the DC budget to assist those programs with being supported and launched. But Dr. Lamont, let's jump back to Dr. Chapman. Dr. Chapman, do you want to speak a little bit about that Howard University program? I've heard so many magnificent reports about it. And then we'll also talk about yesterday at Union Temple. But tell us what some of your outstanding observations or thoughts about what happened at Howard University. Was it a week ago Saturday? It was recently held.
May 31st.
So, Joni, you know that I work with the Howard University College of Medicine and the Howard University College of Pharmacy. But by bringing the School of Social Work and we're really bringing in the so-called social determinants of health. 80% of health outcomes are things that happen outside of the doctor's office and outside of the hospital. So this is just a brilliant architectural plan to implement what we know works best by bringing in the strongest leadership from the community to support the medical work that we do. You can go in the hospital, you can go in the doctor's office and get a prescription or get some treatment. But once you walk out that door, if nobody in the community is there to support you, then it all falls apart. So that's what makes this so unique. And we think that eventually by bringing in the School of Business, we can create a business plan that shows how the work that Dr. Malone, Tyrone Parker, and others have been doing for years actually saves money, in addition to saving lives. So we know what works, and now we're bringing all of those various pieces together in a business plan.
Yes, and we want you to also share some of the highlights. You are a beloved and respected hero when it comes to fighting opioid abuse in not only D.C., but really nationally. But if you could just, and then we'll jump back to Dr. Malone, just brag a little bit about one or two of your really magnificent achievements when it comes to the opioid epidemic in D.C.
So Joni, working with the Howard University College of Pharmacy, when fentanyl hit in 2015, we recognized that Washington, D.C. was the epicenter. We went from 20% fentanyl in 2015 to 91% in 2019, and now we're at 96% to 98%. But we noticed that one of the three medications used to treat opioid use disorder, a medication called buprenorphine, or commonly called Suboxone, required higher doses. And we were actually able to use the Howard University College of Pharmacy to look at my patient records and then published two reports that showed that these higher doses work. So as of last year, the District of Columbia, the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, and the FDA changed their recommendations for the dosing of this medication. That's just one example. The second was the fact that we partnered with particularly faith institutions in the community.
Yes.
Through the Leadership Council for Healthy Communities, through our brothers at the mosque, Brother Edward Tate and Aaron Muhammad, and all of us came together bringing business leaders like Kamal Ali to the table so that we're all working together on using our various skills and expertise. So it's not one person, it's a leadership team that has come together. And of course, Reverend Willie Wilson has been there from the very outset, setting the tone, the historical tone. And now by having Dr. Roger Mitchell as president of the Howard University Hospital on board, we're going to be able to really focus through this academic setting the solutions to our problems.
Absolutely. And of course, if people do not know, Reverend Willie Wilson is very much a part of the WPFW family and the emeritus, is that how you say it? Pastor at Union Temple Baptist Church. And let's jump back to Frank Malone. Maybe you could give a shout out, Dr. Malone, to this magnificent organization that many listeners don't know about called CRUZ.
My goodness. Ed Tate, one of the leaders with Tyrone Parker, has put together interfaith organization. Now, I was just with them on Saturday. I've been in many meetings. I've been with Ben Crump last week. I met with the sheriff of Prince George's County. I've been on the phone with the governor of Maryland's team talking fatherhood. But Ed Tate took us deep up in the southeast with crews that have a men's spiritual circle at the Highlands public housing location up on Atlantic Street. It was powerful. We were able to talk to the men in the community to let them share their hurt and pain and give them support and direction for how they can take control of their neighborhood. I left there feeling a sense of success, because when older men and purposeful men reach out to men in need, we create a bridge over the chasm of dysfunction. It was outstanding.
Wow.
Touched my heart.
Yes, and
that brings us
I'm always trying to remember what CRUSE stands for, but I must say
Citizens
I've attended
for the
some.
Right to survive.
But it's a beautiful words that go with a CRUSE, and I must say those meetings are some of the most inspiring community meetings I've ever been to. It's often packed with mostly brothers from Southeast. But other people, many people come too, and it's they're dedicated to the community. And Dr. Chapman attends the meetings. Roach Brown is often there. Ambrose, when he's well, is there as well. So it's a very inspiring organization. Of course, Tyrone Parker. But let's jump into Sunday real quick. And I know Dr. Chapman said it was the most inspiring Father's Day he's had in quite a while. But Frank Malone, why don't you describe what happened yesterday at Union Temple Baptist Church as you honored a whole team of the Black fathers, young and older.
Let me say this. This is our 13th year. The DMV Fatherhood Coalition is in its 13th year lifting up fathers and men, the overlooked, the neglected, the needed leadership to save our children and families. And Union Temple, Reverend Wilson and Reverend Anika Wilson, Pastor, have been there for us. Now, here's what happened. This year, we recognize five outstanding fathers, and we recognize a new father of the year. That is Dr. Edwin Chapman. But he follows in the footsteps of people like Kamal Ali, Dr. Roger Mitchell, A. Scott Bolden, Councilmember Robert White. These were people who served in that capacity before him, and keeps the lineage of the Father of the Year alive. Then we recognize Bishop George E. Holmes, the religious Father of the Year, a man who's known by the Senate, Congress, presidents. Then we recognize the young Father of the Year, Prince Ham. Prince Ham is in the community. He's in the detention centers. He's all over the community bringing hope to our youth. And he's a new father. Then we recognize Reverend Norman Nixon, a man from Union Temple who distinguishes himself by his work. He started, of course, with Marion Barry and has grown to a stature that I can't even explain. Then there was the incarcerated Father of the Year. That's right. Mr. Curtis Dixon, who was behind bars, but still doing the work of an involved, concerned father with his family. It was powerful.
Wow. That's quite something. And we thank you. And I know Tyrone Parker was very much involved. I'm sure Roach Brown was as well, and many, many others. Dr. Chapman, just briefly tell us, share with us your feelings from yesterday. Then we only have maybe 10 minutes left. I want you to save some time to talk a little bit about the dangers, threats to Medicaid. But tell us how it was for you yesterday.
So, Joni, you know, every time I set foot in Union Temple Baptist Church, I feel that I'm on hallowed ground because mm-hmm. it sits at the foothill of Cedar Hill, or the home of Frederick Douglass. So 30 years ago, I was invited to speak among 20 community representatives just before the Million Man March. And at Union Temple, Reverend Wilson had gathered all of the leadership for the Million Man March. And I got a call from Vernon Hawkins to speak. They gave us 1 minute. Mm-hmm. And so to come back to Union Temple, and you know, you and I were there on Martin Luther King's birthday this year.
Yes. And wow. So was Prince Ham, by the way. He was one of our guests on the radio.
So as I said yesterday, this is the one Father's Day that I'll never forget. Because, again, to be in the presence of such iconic leadership who have served for decades in the community is just overwhelming. I just can't express it any other way. It is in the top five of the days that I'm going to remember. And I said yesterday, of course, I had to say that my marriage 49 years ago was number one, the birth of my son was number two, and the birth of my daughter was number three. So Union Temple falls two of the top five of the days that I always remember, the Million Man March and Father's Day yesterday.
Wow. Well, congratulations for that well-deserved award. And thank you, Dr. Franklin Malone, for really leading this effort yesterday and much, much more. We hope to really, not just on this show, but Roach's show and Ambrose and others, to really highlight the work that you're doing, Dr. Chapman, and, of course, Union Temple as well. I want to give a special shout-out to Vernon Hawkins, who is one of my heroes. I had the blessing to work with him extensively in the 1980s during the HIV epidemic, and I have some stories, but I can't better not share them at this moment. But they're all very positive about Vernon Hawkins. We only have a few minutes left, but As everyone knows, we're facing a crisis, many crises in this country. We have to organize to fight back. And one of the crises is the very real threat on our healthcare system. And of course, where else would the threat be but at the most vulnerable population, those people on Medicaid? And my understanding, Dr. Chapman can share what is happening in the District of Columbia with this budget. I've been hearing a lot of complaints. In fact, there is a rally tomorrow about what is being called the rally against the big beautiful budget in front of the Wilson Building tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. But Dr. Chapman, share with us your concerns about the threat to Medicaid in D.C.
So, Joni, there's a universal threat to Medicaid all across the country through the Trump administration. Just to be brief, they want to require place work requirements for people to continue to get Medicaid. But imagine the bureaucracy involved in that when many of our Medicaid constituents are homeless and don't have telephones. So the fact that you would have to be reconfirmed every 6 months is an expensive bureaucratic process in and of itself that's designed to fail. But locally in the District of Columbia, we're going to be even more impacted because the federal government generally pays, I believe, 70% of Medicaid for the district because of the construct of the district. And they want to cut that to 50%, which is going to put an undue burden on the local government, in addition to the fact that they've already put a burden through this big, beautiful bill by cutting $1 million from the local budget. So you can see that there are multiple angles that the Trump administration is going after the district. And one thing that I'm very concerned about is the order of our priorities. I love sports. I love football. But I think the optics are not good when the local government can find a way to come up with $1 billion to give to a billionaire to build a new stadium or a new home for the football team, but can't find housing for our homeless. And just to tie it together, 30% of the overdose deaths in the District of Columbia are among the homeless. So we know that housing is a key component. And we think that through CRUES, through Leadership Council for Healthy Communities, through 100 Fathers, that we can actually take the homeless off the street, put them in buildings or hotels. Yeah. And we have the wherewithal through our medical schools, our social service components to take care of the homeless and actually save lives and save money. So that's something we really need to look at. We found the community service components that we've talked about today that can actually do this work.
Well, we want to thank you and congratulate you, Dr. Edwin Chapman. Of course, this won't be the last time you're on my show. Or Dr. Chapman is on three shows here often, and that's with Roach Brown, Ambrose Lane, and myself. So he's very much a part of our family. We thank him, and we thank Dr. Malone for the award, the well-deserved award. Dr. Malone, I'm going to give you the last word. You only have 1 minute, and let me just say this.
Economic development is always going to be good for our city. We can build housing with money and put people to work, but we got to make sure that we build housing with the economics that could come in. I want to say that. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, fatherhood. Don't forget the fathers. We're the protectors and the watchtowers that will keep you safe. How about us for some services, supports, and opportunities? Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dr. Franklin Malone, founder and CEO of 100 Fathers, co-chair of the DMV Fatherhood Coalition with my friend Tyrone Parker. Congratulations. And thank you for all the work you're doing. Thank you, Dr. Chapman, for everything you do each and every day. We're going to be soon going into the next hour at 11 a.m. We're going to be speaking with historian C.R. Gibbs about Emancipation USA, DMV, and Texas, of course, in recognition of Juneteenth. But I want to thank you so much. Again, Dr. Franklin Malone and Dr. Edwin Chapman, for the work you are doing for our community, for all of us. As we know, none of us are free until all of us are free. And thank you, Magic Mike. We're going to go out with a little bit of music. And again, I will be back at 11. But thank you very much.
We're going to chase those crazy ballads out of town. Chase those crazy
chase those crazy. Chase them crazy.
Peace, family. On Sunday, June 22nd, at WPFW's Jazz and Justice Festival at Malcolm X Park, WPFW invites community filmmakers to join the music. During the festival, in the Josephine Butler Park Center next to Malcolm X Park, WPFW will host a community film showcase celebrating liberatory stories of resistance, resilience, and rhythm. Short works, 12 minutes or less, whether first-time experiments or seasoned productions, will be welcomed for submission at films@wpfw.org. Submissions will remain open through midnight, Wednesday, June 18th. Technical polish is secondary to vision, heart, and voice. This is an open call, and there is space for every perspective that fits under the 12-minute time limitation and reflects our community's values. Once more, the submission email address is films@wpfw.org. WPFW, making the world a better place, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Robin Holder.
And this is Miyuki Williams.
The Jazz and Justice Festival happens Sunday, June 22nd, from noon until 8 p.m.
Presented by WPFW in collaboration with Washington Parks and People, the event is an activation of music, poetry, social justice teachings, elder circle, visual arts, wellness, children's activities, and more. It takes place in Malcolm X Park and the Josephine Butler Center, located at 16th and Euclid Streets Northwest.
Performers in the park include Saiz Kamaladeen, Kaba Soul Singer, The Silk Trio, Lady Murr, and the Proverbs Reggae Band.
There will be musical sets by DJs Abby, Lance Reynolds, Rita Burns, Willard, and Underdog.
In the Josephine Butler Center, there'll be short documentary screenings curated by Jordan Strudwick, an art exhibition created by Adrian Ferguson of the Art of Noise Gallery, and a community tea presented by Milani Douglas.
The Jazz and Justice Festival, an afternoon of joy as resistance, Sunday, June 22nd, noon until 8 p.m. Details at wpfwfm.org.
WPFW.
Building a better world.
One broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. For nearly 5 decades, support from listeners like you has kept WPFW's wheels rolling. In fact, the single largest category of donations comes from those who donate an unused car to the station. That's right, running or not. Even a car sitting idle that needs thousands of dollars in repairs can do wonders for WPFW. If you can't drive it, donate it. WPFW will get the proceeds, and you'll get a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings, this is Papa Wabe inviting you to check out my new showgram, Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, every Thursday morning from 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We present a mashup of positive, uplifting music of different genres, mainly roots reggae. We also feature poetry, speeches, artist interviews, and so much more. That's Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, Thursday mornings, 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on WPFW 89.3 FM, making it a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Free Your Mind!